Hello, everyone. We know that our children have been suffering mightily through COVID in and outside of the classroom. And at the height of COVID, many kids were suffering, especially low-income, low-resource kids and Black and brown kids across America. One way to make up this lost ground is through out-of-class and out-of-school time programming, like after-school programming. I'm excited today because we are talking to Ron Ottinger, the Executive Director of the STEM Next Opportunity Fund. His expertise is out of school time at STEM education and building collaboration among schools, science centers, communities, and after school programs that increase STEM learning for all. A poll by the After School Alliance found that students from low income families participate in after school programs, including STEM related after school programs, declined from 4.6 million to 2.7 million from 2004 to 2020. And that was before COVID and the impact on America. So you can imagine the challenges that communities and students are going through as we try to figure out how to make up this learning loss post-COVID. So today we're gonna get into it. What needs to be done? What communities need to be doing? What after-school programs need to be doing? What policymakers need to be doing to make sure that all kids, regardless of where they are, have access to effective STEM out-of-school time programming. Now, let's start the show.
From the STEM Global Action Studios in New Orleans, this is the Let's Talk STEM with Dr. Calvin Mackey podcast. STEM Global Action is a national leader in creating STEM-based learning activities and delivering them virtually and in communities around the globe.
Hi, and welcome back to the episode. This is Ken Stang, your moderator. Today on Let's Talk STEM, we have a great guest. We're going to get started. But before we jump right in, let's say hello to our host and our leader, Dr. Calvin Mackey. Hi, Dr. Mackey.
Hi, Ken. I'm excited about today. As I said in the intro, you know, here at STEM NOLA, we do out-of-school time programming, in-school time programming. This summer, we engaged over 6,500 kids in STEM programming. And today, to have Ron Ottinger on here to talk about his efforts in terms of the Million Girl Moonshot and his after-school programming, this is something that the nation needs to hear about.
Thank you so much for joining us today, Ron. You've had a very long and distinguished career in STEM and STEM education. Tell us about your STEM story and what you've learned along the way.
Well, thanks so much for having me, Calvin. It's always a pleasure to engage with you. You are one of the gems in the country in the STEM education world. So thank you so much for having me on. And Ken, you are a moderator par excellence. So thank you. For all that you're doing to get all of these important messages and word out to communities. The short version is that I grew up in a very political family. My dad was a congressman from New York, first Democrat elected in Westchester in 50 years. He was a champion for civil rights. So I followed somewhat in his footsteps. I was elected to the San Diego City School Board for 12 years, and along the way, helped lead the AVID College Preparation Program for low-income kids and first-time college goers. So I was very steeped in this work. And then the Noyce Foundation found me. Robert Noyce was the co-founder of Intel, so this was their family foundation. And they asked me to come in and said, based on your background in politics and policy and, you know, big systems change, how do we get more kids who've been left out of the STEM economy engaged in STEM learning? And so I became the executive director of the Noyce Foundation for a decade. And when they decided to sunset, they set me up and said, go, keep going. That's what I've done since 2017. STEM Next Opportunity Fund has worked in all 50 states and on these important STEM questions to really get the kids who need to be in STEM programs in and out of school engaged. So it's been an interesting journey, but very rewarding.
I mean, to have the blessing and the backing of one of the founders of Intel is an absolutely amazing story, just in, you know, in and of itself. I mean, so you've been on this journey of STEM for a long time. You know, Ron, I often say this, you know, people talk about STEM. I say, I remember when it was Tim. I remember when it was Met, Smet. Yes. I remember when
it, I remember when it was STEM cells, right? You couldn't make... say STEM because of stem cells and the whole debate.
Right, you know, people start talking about stem cells. So it's good, you know, to be talking to someone who's seen, you know, the journey and the arc come to this, you know, science, technology, engineering, and mathematics. But, you know, why is STEM so important? I know, you know, a lot of families, you and I just throw around the word STEM because it's like water to us. But a lot of communities and a lot of families, a lot of people just don't understand why STEM is important.
Yeah, well, you know, when we're all suffering droughts this summer, certainly we are in California, and through many communities in the country, we have, you know, speaking of no water, even those communities that have water, the water is, you know, not safe to drink. You know, we have major issues confronting communities that you know, really require a scientific solution or an engineering design solution, and certainly all using technology and math undergirds it all. So, you know, the jobs that are here now, not just in the future, all require, you know, the being able to think like an engineer, being able to think like a scientist. And so, you know, whether or not a young person goes into one of these fields, even though, you know, they need those skills and that background. And so helping parents understand that they should encourage their kids to pursue STEM is one of the most important priorities that certainly we're pursuing, and we think all organizations working in this area should pursue.
You know, I never forget, you know, all these memes on the internet, and people, you hear kids in class all the time, like algebra, say, when we ever use this stuff in life, right? And then the pandemic came, and everybody talking about lowering the curve and getting the curve down. And now Y equal E to the X became important to everybody. And I like to tell people, you know, in the middle of the pandemic, nobody was saying, when are the politicians going to solve this? Nobody was saying, when are the lawyers going to solve this? Nobody was saying, when are the celebrities and the athletes are going to solve this? Everybody was waiting on the scientists, the technologists, the engineers, and the mathematicians to somehow come up with a solution. So really, the pandemic and COVID was the great teacher and a great introduction for STEM for All and STEM literacy.
Yes. Well, my son had his first teaching assignment, Calvin, in New Orleans, in a bilingual school, French immersion school, and he's had to start out teaching pre-K, K, 1 and 2 online as his first teaching assignment. And, you know, the only way kids, particularly in kindergarten, you know, and pre-K learned anything was because their parents were on there with them. And so I think the country gained a better appreciation of the role of parents during the pandemic. Certainly parents gained a much better appreciation of what teachers do and what, and then after school programs filled in, as you all know, in New Orleans and elsewhere, providing food and, you know, clothing and helping folks, you know, get the rental, you know, assistance and so forth. So I think, you know, it changed the game and the equation on, you know, really understanding the high value of parents and of education. Mm.
So, Ron, let's talk about STEM next for a minute, the organization that you run. So you all focus on resources in the after school and in summer. First of all, tell us why that's important to you and to the organization, and then what you do that's unique or different from others.
Yes. So STEM Next grew out of, as I mentioned a little bit earlier, the Noyce Foundation and the Noyce family, who wanted to see more kids, particularly kids who had, you know, not been engaged in the Intel workforce, you know, have those opportunities, and particularly kids from diverse backgrounds, kids, you know, young women, you know, kids who are from low-income communities, you know, they wanted to figure out how could we get those kids engaged. And it was around that time that former President Obama, you know, who has a commission on science and technology, the leading scientists, the major business leaders in the country, came together at his request to say, so what would it take? How would we get more kids engaged in STEM learning? And in 2010, they came out with this incredible kind of groundbreaking report on, you know, saying you have to both prepare and you have to inspire kids. And that means is you got to motivate them. You got to give them a reason to want to learn. And then once they're motivated, you got to give them, you know, the academic skills and knowledge they need to succeed. So you need both. That equation is critical. And STEM Next really took up the mantle on the inspire side, because we know for many kids, you know, kids are only in school, you know, for 20% of the day. 80% of the day, they're doing something else. Well, instead of, you know, watching TV or, you know, other activities that they could be involved in, they could be doing fun STEM activities and, you know, doing a science experiment, working, you know, to build something and make something. And so STEM Next really took up that mantle of how do we get more kids, you know, to really get that spark, to really get engaged with STEM, you know, to, like they said, the old commercials got milk. Well, now it's got STEM. You know? You have it? Because if you don't have it, you need it. And so that's what STEM Next does. We work in all 50 states throughout the country. You know, we help build the capacity of organizations to offer quality STEM to families and to their kids. And then we study it to know, you know, are we making a difference or not? Are we moving the needle or not? That's really been our hallmark.
So, you know, as we're recording this, we're preparing for back to school. And, you know, a lot of times during the summer, you hear about things about learning loss, you know, what kids do, what they, I guess, forget, I guess is the best way to put it during the summertime. But then there's also this thing now called accelerated learning. Can you tell us about that and how STEM fits into that, particularly in the after school space?
Yes. So it's a tragedy. I mean, we have, you know, we had a lost generation during World War II. And unfortunately, you know, we are on a precipice of having another lost generation. You know, how many kids are actually going back to school? How many kids are actually going and getting into after school programs? So, you know, the organizations on the ground, the Boys and Girls Clubs and the Y's and you know, the 4-H's and Girls Inc. and all of those organizations who work directly with parents and the local versions of them, you know, are so essential to getting kids back and engaged with learning. You know, after satisfying the essentials of having a roof over their head and some food, you know, on their plates. So, you know, this is A, we got to get folks back into learning. B, STEM learning, you know, is hands-on. It's in an environment which is low stakes and after school, you know, they're not being tested on it. And they can work in groups, which is, you know, what kids need to do to advance their learning. And so, you know, we think that, you know, that science and engineering, technology and after school is just a great way to get kids engaged in learning. And when you talk about accelerate, first, we've got to catch them up. Right. The key is, what is it going to take to get a kid engaged? What's it going to take to get a kid excited? Whatever it is, if it's, you know, sports, if it's music, if it's art, if it's, you know, STEM, we've got to get kids back into learning. And then we have to have them do the kind of learning that'll make a difference to their future. And that's where, you know, STEM comes in.
Got it.
You know, Ron, that's why we're kindred spirits. I mean, STEM Next and STEM NOLA entire mission is to expose, inspire, and engage communities in STEM. You look at the formal world of school, you look at the informal world of like Boys and Girls Clubs and museums. Right. We say our sweet spot is the non-formal space where we go into the community, meet families and kids where they are, whether it's on a corner or whether it's on a basketball court with kids out there playing, or just in a park where we just bring rockets or drones out and showcase things for the first time. But that inspiration part is so important and the hands-on part is so important. At STEM NOLA, we say hands-on mean minds on. Right. And I'll never forget when I was 9 years old, my uncle visited me from California and he brought me an Erector set, a little kit with wheels and a little motor in it and things like that. And I sat in the middle of the floor where he and my dad laughed and clowned around. And I built the little car. I put the rubber band on the motor and the wheel, and the car rolled across the floor. And my uncle jumped up and screamed, "That boy is going to be an engineer." Now, my dad and my uncle both dropped out of school in rural Louisiana to pick cotton. But he said, "That boy is going to be an engineer." And he planted that seed. And now I have 3 engineering degrees. And I say that to say anecdotally, the work in after school and out of school time, informal spaces where kids can just be and explore, like, you know, middle class kids just get to explore. I'm gonna just try something. If I don't like it, I go on to the next thing. All kids need that space to just explore and find those things that set that fire, light that fire in them.
Absolutely.
You know, while we're talking about the after school space, you know, recently the Department of Education at the federal level has this new thing called the Engage Every Student Initiative that it could have some really good benefits for the after school STEM community. I'd like for both of you all to talk about how you think that could be implemented in communities and what parents and families can, what should they know about this and what are the questions they should ask teachers, principals, and others?
Well, for the first time, the head of the Department of Education, Secretary Cardona, came out and said, money should not be an object to a child getting into an after-school program. There's enough money out there in the COVID Relief Act, the American Relief Act, that every child who wants to be in an after-school program, whose families want them to be in an after-school program, should be able to get into one. Now, that means we got to get more money to the programs because they're going to need to expand. They're going to need to, you know, it's already tough to hire staff. We all know about staffing shortages, you know, everywhere. But, you know, parents also make good, good after school program facilitators and leaders. So we got to get, you know, help the program staff up, and we got to make sure that the programs, you know, get the money that's out there so that the kids can get into them. So the basic thing is if you're being told as a parent, no, we don't have enough money, you know, for you to come and get into this program, well, there is enough money. So A, they should talk to, you know, someone at the school site, if that doesn't work, there's several places they can go, either, you know, to their city, but also the Louisiana After School Network. They know all the regulations and the rules, and they know, you know, who should be getting what, so they can contact the Louisiana After School Network, who's on top of, you know, where that money's going and how to access it.
Before COVID, the After School Alliance had done a study that showed that between 2014 and 2020, the number of kids participating in after school programs declined from 4.6 million to 2.7 million. Mm. And that was before COVID. So the fact that, you know, every student, I mean,
engage what is it called? Every, I'm so sorry. Engage every student.
No. So, you know, the Engage Every Student Act is, like Ron said, one of the first times where we have the money necessary to make sure that all kids can engage in after school. And why is that important? Because we know time on task matters. We know when kids have time to do things and explore, it matters. But also we do know this, that before COVID and before Engage Every Student Initiative, there was inequity an educational system. There was inequity in terms of how funds were distributed. So I'm looking forward to working with the Louisiana After School Network to make sure that the funds are distributed in an equitable way to make sure that those communities that otherwise really need the funding, to make sure that kids get engaged in after school, receive that funding, because we have to make sure that many of our urban and rural communities are receiving the funds, not only receiving the funds, but make sure that they have high quality programming such that the kids who do engage get what they need from the Engage Every Student initiative.
So, you know, so we're talking about funding that comes from this initiative. What other changes are needed for education systems, for people to understand that there needs to be more young people of color who are involved in STEM learning and STEM education? What needs to happen, Ron?
So many things. you know, the good thing is, though, Ken, that, you know, there are already strong examples of, you know, what it takes. And I'm sure, Calvin, you can talk about the good examples in New Orleans and in Louisiana. But, you know, I think from the after school and out of school time and summer learning standpoint, a quality program an organization that's offering them, has trained staff. They know how to engage kids. They've had, some background in the program. You don't need to be a scientist. You don't need to be an engineer. You just need to be someone who works well with kids, because we know from research that, adults just asking good questions and helping kids, explore and learn is one of the most important, educational techniques. So we need, we need to have trained staff. We need to make sure programs are fully staffed. The equipment needed, is minimal, but it needs to be there. Good thing is there are really, strong organizations who, can take advantage of this, but they're going to have to expand if they're going to take more kids. Like Calvin, like you just said, we've seen a huge dip. Now they're going to need to staff up, in order to offer the kind of programming. And it's tougher in rural communities. You mentioned rural communities. We're now learning what it takes, to help train staff in rural communities virtually. There's an organization called Acres, and they've really, developed an expertise, in training staff virtually. So whatever it takes is what we have to do, whether it's in an urban community or a rural community.
Right. What Ron said are definitely many of the key components that's necessary to change those numbers. But one of the major components is access. I mean, if it's not accessible, then the kids cannot partake in it. And we have online and offline. As a trained engineer, there's only so much you can get online. At some point, like we say, the rubber must meet the road somewhere. Now, I can dissect a sheep part online all day long, but until I hold a sheep part in my hand and do a dissection, I don't know if I want you near me. So the bottom line is that we got to create access for everybody, meaning that the resources are distributed in such a way that communities that otherwise never really had access to after school programming for things like STEM, they get it now. And many of the communities I'm talking about, they have access to things like football and basketball, and somehow they find the money to put on after school programming for sports, but somehow they can't find the funding to put on after school programming for STEM. So lately I've been talking again about the soft bigotry of low expectations. We have to raise the expectations for all kids and expect STEM literacy for all of our communities, and make sure as a nation we are doing what is necessary to provide high quality programming in all areas.
Again, I would say this funding flows through school districts, primarily. So if you're a parent, if you're a family advocacy organization, or you're an organization who advocates for families and communities, I should be asking you know, superintendents and school board members, you know, where is the after school program, you know, in STEM for our kids? Because the money's there. So they have to apply for it. And if, you know, if they're not applying for it, then folks got to be on top of them and hold them accountable and make sure they do. Because this is a time, you know, the other thing I would say here, and Kevin, I think you would agree, you know, we have to show that we can do quality work and have, you know, make a difference for kids with this money. Because if we do good work and we show good outcomes, then the money will be continued. Right now, the money ends in 2 years. Well, if we can show it makes a difference, then we can prevail on Congress and you know, the president to re-up this money going forward. So we've got to show it works.
And again, I'm glad you brought up the parents and the families and advocacy, because, you know, people make decisions. You know, I mean, the money comes and then people make decisions. And that don't mean that their decision will be to put the money in after-school program, even though they're supposed to put it in, you know, after-school program and out-of-school time to accelerate learning. So that's why it's very important for parents and advocates to ask the question, where is my program, right? You know, where is our after-school program? And expect a response, because the money is there. Where pretty much every school now can have after-school program for their kids. And we're not just talking about things like 21st Century, which was federal delegated dollars, you know, pre-COVID. There are monies now, parents, that your kids should be receiving for the type of programming that STEM NOLA is providing across this country.
Yep.
So real last question for both of you. Let's talk about the role models in STEM. How important is it for people to see someone who looks like them and is from their neighborhood, you know, that overall representation? Does that really have an impact on young people?
It's essential. And we know from research, particularly for young girls, you know, who question whether or not science or engineering is for them. And, you know, it's if they can't see someone who looks like them, if they can't see someone, you know, who has a career that they might, you know, consider, it's not going to happen. And if they don't have parents who encourage, you know, it's funny. I was talking to the head of Girl Scouts before the pandemic, and she said, you know, we spent 100 years keeping fathers out of Girl Scouts. So it was, you know, it was only mothers. Well, then we realized when we got into STEM, we need the fathers to be telling their daughters, you know, that they should, you know, stay engaged and really learn about the importance of science and technology, engineering and mathematics. So, you know, the tandem of families encouraging, the most important strategy of all is encouragement, you know, from a family standpoint. And then they need to see and actually engage, you know, with women, with, you know, with employees from companies from diverse backgrounds. And so, you know, we not only want resources from companies, and I'm sure Calvin, you have, you know, can expand on this much better than I can. But when we're talking to a Boeing, or, you know, we're talking to a Panasonic, you know, Qualcomm, and the companies who are supporting our work across the country, it's not just about money, it's about their employees. How can we get the employees from, you know, diverse backgrounds engaged with kids in local programs and communities? That's you know, as critical as the resources they can provide.
Ron, thank you for that. And Ken, is very critical. I'm gonna talk about not only how critical it is, I'm gonna talk about the challenge in terms of how do we fix that, right? I mean, my sons are blessed. I have two sons. I have a son right now at Howard in the engineering program. Another son who's a senior in high school. If he wants to go into STEM, he can, but he's kind of hinting at me every day he's not going to go into STEM. You know, every day, you know, he come down and he gives a speech or something I'm doing. He's letting me know he's not going to go into STEM. But my point is that he has the capability of doing STEM. But he grew up in a house where his mother is a trained pharmacist. His father is a PhD in engineering. All right, so is normal for them. The question becomes, how do we marshal the human capital and the technical capital out of, let's say, my middle class neighborhood and out of my house and into other communities where kids can see, touch, and feel people like me and my wife and know that it is real. One example, before we got on the podcast, I was just telling my team that the new dean of engineering at the University of New Orleans wants to visit our site on Friday. So I went over to a young lady who's working on her master's at UNO in engineering. And I said, I really need you here because I'd like the dean to talk to you about your experience with STEMNOLA and your experience at UNO and how us working together can be different. And she said, well, when is he coming? I said, at 1:30. And she kept saying, he. And I let her kept saying he. And then I eventually said, it's a she, it's a woman. And her eyes just got big. She said, a new dean is a woman? But she never gave thought to the fact that the dean could be a woman. And then when I disclosed that to her, I wish you could have seen the light that went off in her eyes, because I know she's going to be here tomorrow because she wants to meet this woman dean. And that's why at STEMNOLA, we say we built what we call a high-functioning STEM community. And a high-functioning STEM community is child-centered. Everything we do is focused on the K-12 kids. Adult governed, the adults in our community are the college kids. So we surround the kids with the college kids because the adults in the high functioning community, they have to do the work. So our college kids don't volunteer, they do the work and we pay them. We put over $3 million in the hands of college kids over the last 9 years, bringing them back into the community and having them work with kids. Now, so kids can see themselves, they can see themselves in any grade, but now they can see and touch and feel other college kids. And now they know that this is a process. These kids were young like me one day, now they're in college, maybe one day I can be them. Ron, and then we surround those college kids with STEM professionals. And we call that vertical mentoring. So at any given time and at any place, a kid can see the next stage of their life. And we bring all backgrounds, all ethnicities, all genders to the table, because I think it's just as important for, you know, parents come up to me all the time and said, you will not believe what it means to my child to know that you are their friend. They walk around saying, Dr. Mackey, my friend, right? But it's just as important for kids of other races to know that people of other races are doing these things too. So we pride ourselves on the fact that, you know, our events are cross-cultural, multi-ethnic, cross-socioeconomic arenas where people come together and work together and learn to collaborate, because everybody needs to know that everyone has the ability and the possibility to have a career in STEM.
Gentlemen, thank you so much. This has been a great conversation, but we're just about out of time. But before we go, Dr. Mack, any last words?
First and foremost, I want to say thank you to Ron. You know, thank you for what you're doing to STEM Next Opportunity Fund and the work that you all are committed to doing. But thank you for your career and not going another route, right? You and I have been on this road, this journey a long time. And I'm just happy to know that I can look up and pick up the phone and call somebody like you and you know, and get pointed in the right direction, get words of encouragement. And I want you to know that you're making a difference. You made a difference in my life, in my organization. Please keep doing the work. And thank you for being on the podcast.
Back at you. Thank you for having me.
Ron, thank you. Thank you so much for joining us. And thank you, all of you, for joining us today. Please keep up with us on all of your streaming platforms and follow us on our social media channels. That's all we have for now. We'll see you soon. Goodbye.
You've been listening to a STEM Global Action Podcast. Through our STEM-based programming, we put students on the path to quality jobs in science, technology, engineering, and math. Visit us at www.stemglobalaction.com. Until next time, let's keep talking STEM.